Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho, police.
Oh my God!
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucker!
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman. Welcome to the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Today, I'm so thrilled to be here with an incredible group of women. I am here with Tia Lesson, Emma Pildis, Eileen Smith, and Diane Stevens. They are the filmmakers and the subject of The Janes, a documentary premiering on HBO Max that tells the story of a group of Chicago women who helped others navigate the illegal abortion world by providing counseling, information, financial assistance, and abortion services to an estimated 11,000 women in the late 1960s and early 1970s. I am really like starstruck right now because after watching the documentary, that was my Marvel movie. You guys are my Avengers. It was really incredible and moving. I feel like you guys should make the next Marvel should call you guys next.
We're ready.
I think HBO should create some Jane action figures.
Oh, I do like
definitely.
That.
Definitely.
Good costume.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we'll just jump right in. We are speaking a few weeks after a draft opinion leaked from the Supreme Court is suggesting that 5 of the 9 justices are prepared to completely overturn Roe versus Wade, the precedent protecting a woman's right to an abortion. So we're actually talking on Monday after cities across the nation held rallies in support of abortion rights. So I want to point it to Diane and Eileen first. It's a pretty obvious and candid question, but did you ever think we would be back here in a moment like this?
I don't think so. I didn't think it would be so dramatic. I mean, it was just like things were being eaten away and worked around, but I didn't think it would be so dramatic. Although once it happened, you're like, well, of course.
I didn't expect it, but looking at it, I can see how the anti-abortion forces really played the long game of working to put their people in positions of power. They were really smart and devious and awful. And I am so sad and outraged that this has happened.
Yeah, I feel like smart, devious, and awful could be their tagline. I mean, there's no better way to put it than that. So to the filmmakers, I mean, this film is obviously incredibly timely. There have been efforts to nudge the Supreme Court towards a position, as you mentioned, to overturn abortion rights that are really materializing now. But I'm really curious how that timeline matched up to the making of this film. So I'd love to sort of go to the origins. Why did you want us to highlight the story of the Janes and the service right now, or when you decided to make the film? What moved you to start then?
I have a family connection to the story.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it is cool. So Daniel Arcana, who's one of the other producers on the film and also my brother, felt like once Trump got into office and started to pack the courts, that it was time to see what we could do to get this film made. I think, you know, he saw what we were all seeing, he smelled smoke. Mm-hmm. So he started to develop it, and we developed it together and asked Tia if she would like to be involved, and HBO came in very early with a lot of wonderful support. The timing, I mean, I don't know that we could have predicted this, mm-hmm. this timing, you know, the film is coming out on HBO on June 8th. Mm-hmm. And we may or may not have Roe still in place at that point. So the timing is remarkable, but it's not that stunning if you were paying attention. And, you know, they started to eat away at Roe just a couple of years. You know, the Hyde Amendment came down 3 years after. So it's been a slow chipping away for 50 years, and has come to a head in the last couple. And Tia and I are just very humbled to be able to tell these women's story and hope that it does something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the outcome of Roe versus Wade, it feels like it's a really triumphant moment in the film, and it comes sort of towards the end of the film. I'm really curious what it was like for people to re-experience that moment and that victory, knowing that that hard-won victory was potentially in peril. Was that a really emotional process?
We've screened it a couple times, twice, I guess, since the leak. And I will say, watching those final minutes of the film after the leak, hits a bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Diane and Eileen, how about you? What was it like to revisit that, knowing that huge victory was maybe going to be revisited?
Awful.
Yeah.
And like a gut punch. Just like the door slam, you're like, are you kidding me? You almost can't believe it. Yeah.
And were you two of the seven that were arrested?
I was arrested.
You were, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you still remember? I have to ask if you remember the tastes of the note cards.
Yeah, we were chewing on those note cards.
And there's a part in the film where there is sort of like a bust, and to protect, you provided lots of services for women seeking abortion. I mean, really just like 360, whatever they needed. It really throws into relief how many people are kind of necessary to make this a safe experience for a woman. But there is a point where you're getting arrested, and I read that you were eating the cards, but it was most important to eat the names and addresses. So you didn't have to eat all of them, just the names and addresses.
Well, we didn't want any potential people, you know, any woman to have any repercussions from the arrests. When the police came in, you know, I was at the door. The police came in pretty forcefully, and I went to the living room where the women were waiting to have their abortions, and I said, rather redundantly, "This is the police. These are the police." And you've done nothing wrong, and you know, you and do not talk. You do not have to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The period represents a time when abortion was illegal, and you all have really deeply personal reasons for deciding to join the service and helping women access this safely, more humanely, with whatever support they could have. And again, anytime I say this, I can't believe I'm saying it, but we are likely about to enter a period where it is again outlawed in large regions of the country. I think a lot of us who, you know, weren't alive during that period are learning how to reference that time in our activism in a way that is really productive, while also acknowledging that, you know, there are also some new options now, like the abortion pill and medication abortions. So I'm just really curious, how will the world of a legal abortion look different in 2022 from how it did around 1972? And how do you think it'll look the same?
Yeah, I think there's some big differences. The abortion pill is a big one. The internet is a big one. Mm-hmm. A really big one.
Yeah, I kept thinking how the internet could have made a lot of you guys' work a lot more seamless.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it helps as an organizing tool, as we've seen, you know, in a lot of resistance movements, or, you know. So I think there's a lot of big ways that are different. Some of the things that are going to be the same, though, is the state by state thing is going to be the same. It's going to be low income women, women of color, rural women, women that don't have access to cars, women that need childcare, women in, you know, strained abusive relationships. Those are going to be the women that are going to suffer the most. That's not going to be any different if we're making women travel for basic health care. So it's there's parts of this film that, you know, I think in the same way that watching those last moments of the relief on the women's faces in our film when Roe passed and talking about that, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch knowing that, you know, some of the things that happen then are going to happen the exact same way, and there's going to be a lot of casualties.
I think one thing that's so much worse now is that you see much more bullying of women, shaming of women, women being criminalized for maybe a miscarriage. Oh. I think it's way worse in that way. Mm-hmm. That's something that's so harsh and so horrible. The victimization, especially as, you know, Emma was saying, these young women, women of color, women without financial resources, the way they're shamed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the internet is a double-edged sword because while we can get, you know, information and we can use our mobile phones to, you know, call networks, you know, to enable us to find abortion care, that all that information can be collected, can be, you know, subject to police warrant. And, you know, law enforcement agencies can track us down, can look for anybody who's searched for the word abortion pill. And, you know, cast a very wide net. They can also geolocate folks who have been in the vicinity of an abortion care facility or inside a facility. So there's, you know, potential for surveillance that far, you know, exceeds the kind of Red Squad surveillance that we document in the film that the Chicago Police Squad was using. I mean, in that time, they were using index cards. You know, this, so this technology can both, you know, help people find care, but it also can potentially make them subject to prosecution and imprisonment.
There's a point in the film where there's a gentleman just talking about even just how the, like how many flights were organized. And I mean, we were recently talking to somebody at Planned Parenthood who said that's something they're already focusing on, is figuring out how to tell people which airports are actually most accessible from which cities, you know, like the might be a shorter flight here, but you don't have to take as long of an Uber here. And those are just factors that, like, when you're already ending a pregnancy, there are lots of, not everybody experiences the same emotions around it, but some of them, it's like the last thing you want to do is book a hotel and book travel.
Well, just there's that element to it. It's the last thing you want to do, but it's so unjust.
Of course.
It's healthcare. You can't dole out healthcare that way. It shouldn't be based on, you know, where you are and whether you can travel or not. So that's the thing where it just fills me with rage, is just the injustice of that and of supplying healthcare in that, basic healthcare in that way.
And that was another sort of contrast I wanted to maybe make to the times that Diana and Eileen were operating, because it seemed like people knew that you were operating and providing the service, which was illegal at the time, long before the bust sort of happened. And I think as a lot of these laws kind of come up and go into effect, it seems like we're going to be relying a lot on just if prosecutors go after it, or if people bother to, you know, end up pursuing these like bounty law cases. So I'm curious, you know, Diane, you spoke to how kind of the cultural environment is a little bit different with a lot of targeting and criminalization of women. But do you think the political context is also different now? Do you think that, are you concerned about kind of community members being more eager to, you know, report their neighbors for obtaining abortion than before?
I'm worried about that. Yes, I am worried about it. Yeah. You know, of course, the Texas law, and then I think Oklahoma is going to fall into place with similar law. I mean, we saw that woman that was jailed in Texas because of seeking medical care for a miscarriage. And then if there's a financial incentive, and these people are right. They're horrible and they're ruthless, and they really don't seem to care about if a woman has children that are already in the home that she's not going to be able to care for. It's really sick. I mean, I can't. It's so unconscionable.
It seems like a much meaner time. I mean, in a way, abortion back then, I mean, some people would get really upset, but there was a very benign feeling about it in general. And I mean, just like they really didn't even want to do that bust, you know, in the movie.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, you know. But there was more of, we're right now, and a lot of it's because of the political divide and what's happened during the pandemic and when Trump was in. It there just seems to be a meanness that wasn't there before, and it's evil.
It's scary. They're talking about, you know, the new frontier is putting laws in place that not only govern your behavior within a state, but will prosecute people when they go across state lines and potentially international lines. Or right. If they get an abortion pill in another state and then, you know, have the miscarriage back at home. I mean, it's dystopian. It's Handmaid's Tale,
right?
You know,
right.
Fiction, but it's happening, and it's happening now.
It seems like when you were operating, now when we talk about, you know, abortion bans, like, we do recognize that it is low-income women who will suffer the most. It seems like when you guys were operating, it seems like were you providing the service for people who were higher income and were members of, like, had an influence on society? Do you think that that people are just more separate now, that people that are in power and aren't speaking up about this just don't feel like they will be personally impacted?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. Yes, you're right that women that have, you know, are in a better situation, that have access to maybe a friendly doctor that can help them, or, you know, financial resources to leave the country, you know, certainly they've always, you know, had more options than poor women. I don't know. That's a good.
Were you surprised to hear, because after the Texas law, I think there was a lot of questions like, what's going to happen? Will providers actually stop? And based on data analysis, it appears that they have, and abortion rates are really down there. Did you expect that, or did you think that people would just continue with defiance, or were you expecting there to be just like the abortion rates to completely go down?
I expected it to go down. People wouldn't have the money to keep going. I mean, you'd have to have money, you'd have to have the ability to withstand a lot of bullshit and be strong. But financially, you'd need protection. You'd need to have somebody say, hey, we'll go ahead and sue under this thing. Because otherwise, they're just going to close you down. And nobody came forward with the money to continue this. So I wasn't surprised. I thought that would happen.
It amounts to forced childbirth.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
There are women in Texas that are going across the border to Mexico.
Yeah, well, they were going to Oklahoma, and then they're just choking off wherever. I'm not sure if this is intentional in the film, but it does a really excellent job just at showing just how many people were involved in this process. And we were talking about the Texas law, and I just kept talking about the Texas law because it wants to criminalize. You can go after anyone who aids or abets. And just there's so many different people in this film who technically count as aid and abet. You have somebody meet somebody, you need drivers, you need an apartment, you need a roommate willing to be quiet or nice about it, which it sounds like, Eileen, you had some challenges with at various points. But you just think of all of the different people that are involved with this, and it really made me look at the Texas law, which is so horrifying, but even just in a different way because of all of the people you could potentially go after if you wanted to make a quick, I mean, people could like make a cottage industry out of this, out of just suing abortion providers.
It's such a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, you know, when you're mimicking a healthcare system that's non-existent for a group of people, it involves a lot of, support and smarts and organization and a lot of people. You know, the women's families had to be supportive in a certain way. You know, they had to lend out their homes, their partners had to support and do what they could. You know, they had some real male allies in this as well. You know, so I mean, it takes a lot. So that's the scary version of, you know, is being cognizant of that and how much it takes, and then seeing these laws sort of fall into place and realizing that everybody can be prosecuted. The other part of it is how deeply inspiring it is to see all these people that are willing to help and that are willing to fill a void for our government and for our healthcare system, because out of just basic human decency and wanting to save lives. You know, these women will never let us call them heroes for very good reason, because they, you know, they don't want to be deemed heroes because they want the message to be very clear that we all have the option to to do what's right and to do what's decent and to help each other. But this was quite an inspiring thing that they did. And in a, you know, amazing to work with this material and these interviews and in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a healthcare crisis, going in every day and listening to these interviews and, being reminded of their willingness to do this work.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that you watch and you're just like, oh, I love women. Women are the best.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
My closing question, kind of for everybody, where you talk about some of, not your transition to abortion rights, but you just talk about how, your engagement in civil rights and everything, and how there was sort of an element of toxic masculinity to it at the time and different priorities. I personally have a lot of feelings about how the Democratic Party has and has not prioritized abortion access. I think that things could have been done or spoken about differently that could have prevented us from being in this moment. As you said, I mean, the other side has done a very clever strategic job, you know, lining up the court. But have you sort of watched, you know, abortion rights, this debate kind of change over the years? I guess my question is, like, do you have a message for the Democratic Party, or like, what do you think needs to happen? Have you been disappointed by the lack of like real wholehearted embrace by the party? Because you have, I'm getting nods. Yeah, let's talk about it.
I mean, I don't know if I expected much, but it was even less than expected, right? And it's horrifying. And especially now that we're here, no, absolutely disappointed, frustrated, pissed off. They can't get it together. I don't understand. You know, their idea is just, you know, and here's this other side just going straight forward with what they want, and they're getting.
I would just add, I mean, the vast majority of people in this country support the right of people to access abortion care. And the fact that that's not reflected in our state, you know, policymaking, or, you know, the federal courts, the Supreme Court, you know, Congress can't pass this. I mean, it's really outrageous. It doesn't make any sense that we're having these conversations all over again. And the Democrats, you know, need to do a better job to represent, you know, the people in their districts and their communities and their states.
Yeah. Abortion is health care. People don't have access to health care, period. Plus, they don't have access to abortion. So the whole process.
And absolutely everybody, I mean, the day after the leak went out, you know, I tried to make some phone calls, you know, senators, congressmen, you know, it's like, I'm sitting here, I'll do something. I donated some money here and there, you know, everybody outraged. I couldn't get through it all. They're like, our phones are swamped. Can't even leave a message. Don't even bother to send an email. And you're like, yeah, you know, there's a flower place in Chicago that, you know, I've used to send flowers, and they like, and, you know, it's just before Mother's Day. They might, we are too busy making phone calls to our senators and congressmen, but please still ours. So I mean, I thought it was so, and they listed who you should call. Put in your
area. That's awesome.
I was like, wow, that is so cool that they did that, you know? So they were being swamped with these calls, and still, I it's like,
yeah. I mean, I found it really interesting what you said, where, you know, abortion wasn't as like stigmatized. It was somebody was pregnant and wanted not to be. And it feels like we've seeded the cultural language, like Joe Biden doesn't say abortion, and right. people get in their head about whether we're that's incendiary to say the word. And it just feels like we never had to be in this place where it was incendiary to word. I mean, you say the word, you're using it so freely. And, you know, it seems like there have been some definite mistakes that mm-hmm. helped get us here. And obviously there's a very clear people to blame, but definitely some frustrations.
But we can all do, you know, do mm-hmm. our part in the destigmatizing aspect of yeah. it, you know?
Yeah.
I think Tia and I really want to, one thing we would love for this film to do is to promote conversations, for people to be talking about it, and open about it, and feeling safe to be open about it. And also, you know, putting it into the zeitgeist, onto the screen, having it reflect back to people, all the different versions of it, the women that it was a really hard decision for, the women that it was a really easy decision mm-hmm. for, you know, it's time to be able to talk about it. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was going to just say that I think it's already started to do that because the movie's this week in Chicago, it's going to be on HBO. So, you know, then you're talking to people that you don't know that well. And, hey, I'm in this documentary and, you know, if you want to see it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the stories just come out. You know, my
really
illegal abortion, my mother, you're like, you know, you've known these people for, mm-hmm. you know, not like close friends, but all of a sudden it's out there and people are talking. And that is really mm-hmm. important and really good.
I guess you guys don't go about your lives just saying like, hi, I'm Eileen, I'm Diane. I used to help with an underground abortion ring. So it's a good opportunity.
You know, the thing is that one in every four women in their childbearing years will have had an abortion. And so it's a very, very common thing. And it's much safer than a colonoscopy done yeah. right. I mean, it's much safer than a tonsillectomy. The World Health Organization says it's safer than getting a shot of penicillin. So there's no reason why this should be stigmatized, as you know, in this day and age. And so we want this film especially to talk to young people, or actually the entire population of, you know, between the ages of 13, of menstruating people between the ages of 13 and 50, who weren't around in the era before mm-hmm. Roe. And don't know what it looks like, haven't heard of the septic abortion wards that were set up in every city that we show in the film, where women who had self-induced or had, you know, botched abortions came to get care and sometimes to die, who don't know about the struggles that low-income, disproportionately women of color had to get this mm-hmm. basic health care. So we're hoping, you know, that this engages particularly, you know, young people, you know, who have a big stake in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. And just to close, Diane and Eileen, I'm wondering if you have, you know, I'm tempted to just ask you very broadly, which I'm sure everybody does. Do you just have a message for people in this moment? But maybe more particularly, do you have a message for men in this moment?
Support the women. Support the women in your life. Vote. Mm-hmm. Talk to politicians. Just be out there. And understand that this is a basic health care. That it's not this weird thing over to the side that maybe your girlfriend or your wife might have to deal with. That it is just basic health care. Like you can get a vasectomy, or you can, you know, have a colonoscopy, like nobody does, but you know, that it's just basic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cause, and men benefit from this being available too. I mean, that is just like a fallacy, to use a word. That's, you know, that this is just a women's issue. You know, this is not just a women's issue. I mean, it is in that you should listen and be an ally mm-hmm. and let women lead. But this is important for everyone. Yeah. And it's important to remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So step up.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. There you go. In summary, too long didn't read. Step up. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and experiences. Yeah. Our listeners, definitely check out the film. Like I said, it's like a Marvel movie, except I kept like waiting for like at the end of the credits, like then it's like, uh-oh, things are going to turn. Luckily, you just can enjoy the victory of that moment. And just the seeing how you all made it work is very inspirational for a lot of us, a lot of people that are going to be in positions to also help out. So thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.